show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network on this Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. How you doing today, huh? How is it where you are today? Beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. A little bit cloudy, but nonetheless, the weather's nice. And, of course, in the north, spring is upon us, and you won't get too much more snow or too much more cold weather now. March always kind of an iffy time, but it's March Madness time, and my beloved Ohio State Buckeyes are still in the thick of things. I want to say congratulations to the Florida Gulf Coast University ladies team. They're up in Nebraska playing in the, they're in the Final Four now. They're 33-0, Division II NCAA. They're just from just up the road here a couple of miles, and a brand new university, just a few years old, and here they are 33-0, and in the national tournament for Division II and the NCAA. Everybody around here is all excited about that. The game's going to be on TV tonight around 10:30, I think it is. So looking forward to that, to see if they get in the national championship game. Well, 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 and of course there's high school basketball tournaments going on all over the nation right now. And in Ohio, of course, the great Upper Sandusky Rams are in the state tournament, and they're playing tonight. They're state champions of a couple of years ago. Back to the state tournament this year, and who knows, they might win it all. Hey, I want to say thanks to Billy Shears, our dedicated music director here at the Guy James Show. Be sure and head on over there and see his Thursday night special. That's right. Thursday night special. He puts up a new song every Thursday night over at the unreportednews.net. You can find it right there down on the left side of the page. Billy wanted me to let you know, he and I both wanted to let you know, we're offering an anniversary special. We mentioned that yesterday was the first anniversary of the new studio here, and for a couple of days only, today and tomorrow, in addition to the show CD that Billy offered, he's going to give a custom CD to anyone that contributes $10 or more per month to the program. And you can choose any songs, up to 14 songs, to put on that custom CD. So we're letting you know about that. And you can, again, that's for anybody that contributes $10 per month or more. And Billy will fix up that custom CD with 14 of your favorite songs on it, in addition to the show CD. So there you go. I think Bob's going to talk about it tonight as well. Where are we at here today? Oh, Bruce from talkingradio.blogspot is going to be with us right around 4:45 today. I want to thank the good folks over at Rackjite and McClatchy Papers, and Daily Costs. Use some of their material today and like to give credit where credit is due. How many of you saw that fool Senator Imhoff from Oklahoma yesterday? My God, is that guy a raving lunatic or what? I was just I was fascinated by him. I didn't think, of course, we've known for some time now that the guy is some sort of a, I don't know, some sort of a lunatic. Don't you think? And I have to wonder, what in the world did the good people in Oklahoma, what were they thinking when they elected a guy like that? Barbara Boxer put him in his place. Hey, Barb, you got that little cut from yesterday?
Their testimony in writing.
Here he is.
48 hours in advance.
No, this now, isn't him.
Mr. Gore is not only a former vice president, he is a former member of the House.
Wrong cut. Let's do this one.
We'll freeze the time for a minute.
Oh, yes.
I'm just trying to make...
Take your time. We're freezing
the time. We're freezing the time. Just for a minute. I want to talk to you a minute, please.
Did she make an ass of him or what?
Would you agree to let the vice president answer your questions? And then if you want an extra few minutes at the end, I'm happy to give it to you. But we're not going to get anywhere.
Why don't we do this?
We're asking
questions.
Why don't
we do this? At the end, you can have as much time as you want to answer all the questions.
No, that isn't the rule. You're not making the rules. You used to when you did this. You don't do this anymore. Elections have consequences.
All my listeners from Oklahoma, I want to ask you, what in the hell's wrong out there? How can you put a guy like that in the United States Senate? You remember his great statement in front of the Senate here a few months back? I'm proud to announce that never in my family has there been any gay people or any divorces. Stood in front of the United States Senate. There's never been any gay people or any divorces. I wonder how he knew that. I wonder. Oh, well. He's such a dumbass. He really is. I hate to say that about a United States senator, but the guy, and I want to thank Les. Les sent me an email, and I think he's just come up with the best term here for talking about the Bush administration right now. He called it the Axis of Feeble. And I like that, Les. I really do. The Bush administration, the Axis of Feeble. Well, feeble they are. There's no question about that. Wow. This is, hilarious what's going on right now. I think you'll all have to admit it is. It's just hilarious. And the subpoenas are going to be issued. And so far, the Democrats haven't caved. They haven't made any deals yet. They will. Hang on. Oh, they will. But, I want to ask again, what do they have to hide? Why can't they be under oath when they tell us what happened, huh? Are they refusing to be under oath because they're planning to lie to us over and over and over again? I mean, it would be so easy just to get this over with and go up and raise your right hand and testify, tell everybody the truth. That's it. That's all we want to know. The truth. Period. But not going to hear that for a while, I don't think. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to call the program. 866-546-5254. That's toll-free, by the way. I don't know how many of you did this. I warned you ahead of time, and I went and did it myself last night. I watched a segment of the Chris Matthews Show last evening, Hardball. And I watched it with anticipation, and I watched it with utter fascination as it was going on. Here we have a popular political commentator, Matthews, who supposedly is neutral politically. He would like to have us believe that anyway. He worked for Carter during the Carter administration. And, and he at least pretends to be neutral. And at least for the first 5 years of the Bush administration, he was... he was always beating the drum for the Bushies until things started to go really sour, and then he changed his mind about the whole thing, kind of like watching how the American public's mood was going and then joined him to keep his show popular. A lot of them have done that, evidently. Well, last evening, he has Tom DeLay on his program, and I don't mind telling you, I just bristle when I see the likes of Tom DeLay. Snake in the grass, creepy, creepy man, highly unethical, terrible man. And first of all, the DeLay's on this program. He's hawking a new book. And frankly, an appearance on Hardball would be financially huge for him. He'll sell a lot of books to the right-wingers who were watching that program last night. And then, secondly, Matthews asked him a few questions about his book and praises him for being able to drink a dozen martinis and still drive home, just, you know. And then praised him again for admitting that he, too, was an adulterer and a philanderer, just like a bunch of his cronies. And just like Bill Clinton, by the way, whom DeLay called slime again on the program last night. Now imagine this. You write a book. You admit in it that you're a drunken philanderer, adulterer. And then you call Bill Clinton slime? Anybody want to explain that to me? Said he is no longer drunk because he met Jesus. Well, evidently, Jesus better direct him to a couple of chapters in the New Testament about not making disparaging remarks about other people when, you know, about the, what is the old one about the splinter in your eye when someone else got a log or whatever. I'm not too good at quoting that one. But an amazingly telling interview. I mean, here he's got DeLay on, one of the most slimy characters that ever been known in Washington, D.C. And he's calling Bill Clinton slime after he admits to being an adulterer himself. Imagine this. Tom DeLay sitting in the guest chair on a national TV program, having just admitted to cheating on his wife and being an alcoholic, and then calling Bill Clinton slime, and Matthew sits across from him and smiles and nods and doesn't challenge DeLay about being the ultimate hypocrite. Doesn't challenge him at all. And amazingly, during this long interview, not once did Matthews ask DeLay about the indictment for campaign finance felony, a felony, conspiracy charge that he's charged with right now. Been indicted for that, and Matthews didn't mention it. Not a word. Here sits a guy who was one of the most powerful majority leaders in modern times, charged with a felony, having to resign his majority leader position, and ultimately his seat in the House because of it. And Matthews doesn't ask him a single question about it during an interview on his primetime show. Matthews, what gives? How could you be such a suck-up? How could you do that? Does Chris Matthews have any credibility left after that interview last night? Treating Tom DeLay like he's still some kind of a hero in Washington, D.C., acting like all is well when DeLay stands charged as one of the most smarmy politicians ever to walk the halls of Congress, and that's okay with Chris Matthews? Tom DeLay calling somebody else slime? What is it about Texas? What's in the water in Texas that grows people like Dick Armey and Tom DeLay? And need I say, Junior Bush? What goes? What's happening with that? Cornyn? Man, these guys are in a class by themselves. I don't get it, but I did. I watched that last night, and I was doing a slow burn. Okay, now Matthews is going to ask him about his indictment. I mean, you can't have somebody on your show and give them a free pass like that. You just can't do that. Just like it never happened. And just like, you know, that DeLay's back in the good graces of everybody in Washington. Well, he is not. But I'll tell you who he is back in the good graces of, and that's the evangelical Christian community in the South especially. Absolutely. Tommy DeLay is out making appearances at the big churches, hawking his book, and proclaiming to be a great Christian and a great champion for family values. Republican conservative family values. Ah, yes. Tom DeLay. Champion of the right. Oh, the hypocrisy of the whole thing. And then we got Junior Bush. acting like, well, kind of like Howie Mandel. Deal or no deal. I just came to me a minute ago. Well, I'll send everybody up there to talk to you. Of course, they're not going to swear, and they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be any recording of this. They're not going to be any transcript or anything like that. It's going to be behind closed doors. But if you don't do it the way I want it, I'm taking the deal off the table. Deal or no deal, boys. Well, it appears anyway that it's no deal. And it appears that Patrick Leahy is going to stick to his guns. So far, so good. They haven't caved yet. Not yet. I'm still expecting them to. But they haven't done it yet. And of course, the executive privilege thing. There's Tony Snow still throwing that one around. And he says he can't get any good advice from his advisors if they know that their advice is going to be made public every time. And so that's why he's claiming executive privilege. And let me ask you something, Mr. Snow. You have claimed, you have made the claim, you've made the statement that this U.S. attorney situation was not discussed with Mr. Bush. That he did not make the decision on it, not that he was not the decider on it. And so if anybody, that would leave me to claim that if he did, he wasn't involved in it at all, then he didn't get any advice on it from anybody. So if he didn't get any advice on it from anybody, why is the advice of somebody on it worth protecting with executive privilege? Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't. Again, I ask, why can't they be under oath when they tell us what happened? What in essence does Bush offer these people? He offered them to come up and cross their fingers behind their backs and sit in a room with these people, and no transcript. You see, here's the thing, the spin that's going on. They're saying, well, it's not legal to lie. It is illegal to lie to Congress anyway. You can be prosecuted for lying to Congress. They're hiding behind that. Have you noticed how they're all hiding behind that now in the last couple of days? That statement's come up, many, many times. Well, they don't need to be sworn in because lying to Congress is perjury anyway. Okay, let's assume that's true, and it is. You can be prosecuted for lying to Congress without being sworn in. But if there is no transcript, if there is no recording, you cannot charge somebody with perjury without there being a transcript, because then it's just one guy's word against another. So you see, this very generous offer that they're talking about is nothing. Because they know damn well that if they go in that room behind closed doors and there's no transcript, that no matter what they say behind those closed doors, it's going to get them in trouble, get them charged with perjury. They can lie their asses off all day long. And without a transcript, it is not possible to charge them with lying to the Congress. Okay? So when they spin that little gem out, now you know that they're just whistling Dixie, because it doesn't mean a damn thing. There's no lying to Congress without a transcript, and they already said they wouldn't allow a transcript or a recording of any kind. It has to be behind closed doors. And one other little caveat involved is that they're saying that it might only be with a few select members. Well, hope to God the Democrats don't take the bait. Do I think they will? Yeah, I still think they'll make a deal of some kind. Leahy seems to be fairly well upset about it yet, so hope he stays that way. There is so much involved in this, and I know it's not a sexy story. And I know that's why it is not foremost in the minds of most Americans. Because there are no blowjobs involved, there's no cigars involved, there are no clandestine meetings in the Oval Office involved, there's no blue dresses involved, there's no Ken Starr involved telling us the lurid details of testimony every day and getting it leaked out and so forth. There's none of that. There's no Lucianne Goldbergs involved in it so far, no Linda Tripps. So, as far as being newsworthy, in most people's minds, not you and I, because we're politicos, and that's why I'm doing this show, and that's why you're listening to it, because we're all involved in politics and interested in politics. But you have to understand, and it's so frustrating, to know that the American public really hasn't caught on to this story very much. Because in their minds, the Anna Nicole Smith story going on about the paternity test is a whole lot more important than if the White House is trying to take control of the United States attorneys and tell them who to prosecute and who not to prosecute, telling them to prosecute Democrats whenever they can and lay off the Republicans. That's what's involved here. And yet we have a United States public that really, so far, doesn't really give a tinker's damn about this story. And I understand it, because I know how the American public is. You get some salacious details in there someplace. Now, if one of these U.S. attorneys got fired because he was, having a little thing in the back room with somebody, and that got reported, well, that would make this public story. That would be good. What is it about the American public gets so enthralled with stories that has sex in them? Why are we like that? Why are we like that? I don't know. But it's true. And as you well know, just a few weeks ago, MSNBC admitted that their ratings were up fivefold because of the Anna Nicole Smith story. So there you go. American Idol story, Anna Nicole Smith story. All of those to the American public more important than this one. I do believe that the story will become more important as some of the lurid details do come out. You know, that Lamb woman had sent that got fired had sent a notice to the Justice Department saying there would be two search warrants in a criminal investigation of defense contractor Brent Wilkes and Kyle Dusty Fago, who had just quit as the CIA's top administrator amid questions about his ties to the now incarcerated ex-GOP Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham. The very next day, after she'd sent that notice to the Justice Department saying there's going to be two search warrants in regard to those two gentlemen, Kyle Sampson, then Chief of Staff to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, sent an email to William Kelly in the White House's counsel's office saying that Lamb should be removed as quickly as possible. How about that? We all know about the scandal that was going on with Randy Cunningham, and it stopped. The talk about that stopped immediately after he went to prison, and there was some talk about Dusty Fago and Brent Wilkes. And she had sent a notice to the Justice Department saying that there'd be a couple of search warrants out in a criminal investigation. And you remember, Brent Wilkes was the defense contractor in that. It was Payne Cunningham and Dusty Fago, who was also involved in it. So she sends out notice that there's going to be search warrants served. And the very next day, Kyle Sampson, who, by the way, it looks like is going to have to testify in front of the Senate committee. He was then the Chief of Staff to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Next day, he sent an email to William Kelly in the White House counsel's office, saying that Lamb should be removed as quickly as possible. You tell me there's not White House interference in on this. And that would be illegal interference. And to take it a step farther, who's more favored with this administration, and I must say other ones as well, than the tobacco barons? The leader of the Justice Department team that prosecuted the landmark lawsuit against tobacco companies said that the Bush administration political appointees repeatedly ordered her to take steps that weakened the government's racketeering case against these tobacco people. Sharon Eubanks said Bush loyalist and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's office began micromanaging the team's strategy in the final weeks of that 2005 trial to the detriment of the government's claim that the industry had conspired to lie to U.S. smokers. She said a supervisor demanded that she and her trial team drop recommendation that tobacco executives be removed from their corporate positions as a possible penalty. He and two others instructed her to tell key witnesses to change their testimony, and they ordered Eubanks to read verbatim a closing argument they had written for her, she said. The political people were pushing the buttons and ordering us to say what we say, and because of that, we failed to zealously represent the interest of the American people. Eubanks, who served for 22 years as a lawyer at Justice, said three political appointees were responsible for the last-minute shifts in government tobacco case in June 2005. Supervisors intervening with remedy matters with a lawyer trying a case is bad form, to say the least. Demanding a verbatim closing argument be read is really bad form. Neither one of those is illegal. And in fact, at least one of the individuals that was charged in this, or they're talking about in this, was cleared in an internal investigation on these two issues. However, instructing individuals to change sworn testimony is very illegal. This is just more grist for the mill in establishing that Bush and Gonzo care more about politicizing justice than actual justice. And after all, stop and think about it, who is more sympathetic than a tobacco industry executive, right? 866-546-5254. If you'd like to call the program today, we'd love to hear from you. We're going to head off to a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you really want to hear what she does to me each time we're near, come this July, gonna put it in a book. I'm going to get her by hook or by crook. Yeah, I'm going to get her
by hook or by crook.
It's just a matter of time.
By hook or by crook.
Gonna lay it on the line
by hook or by crook.
Like a baby with its
sat on. When we're together, I ain't nothing but a feather, but when we're not, I miss it a lot. Gonna take her mind, lay it on the line. Yeah, she's going to get shook by a hook or by crook. Yeah, she's going to get shook. It's just a matter of time. Gonna lay it on the line. Like a baby with his friend on. And like a cowboy with his saddle.
Sovereignty means in the 21st century, and how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state government?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that it's sovereign. I mean, you've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity, and therefore the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And welcome back here on the Guy James Show on this Thursday afternoon. Good to have all of you along with us today. We've been talking a lot about the U.S. attorney scandal. And, you know, I mentioned a little earlier, somebody sent me a great quote. I love good quotes like this. Wallace Stegner once wrote about an early rival of John Wesley Powell that really applies equally to Republican Senator from Oklahoma, James Inhofe. This is a great quote. He was a preposterous 12-gauge, 100-proof, kiln-dried, officially notarized fool. And that's what I think every time I see James Inhofe. I think about people like him, and I imagine him doing TV ads in Oklahoma and appearing on local TV and at local events there. And then I think of people going in the voting booth and voting for this guy. What kind of an ass clown do you have to be to win a voting booth and pull the lever for a guy like Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma? What? Somebody explain that to me. Surely there has to be somebody in Oklahoma with more sense than this guy. Or maybe, as Bart Kopp usually says, they're a bunch of knuckle draggers. I don't know, but my God, he, it's just hard to imagine that he's a, you know, you can see maybe a guy like that gets to be a county commissioner, maybe even a state representative in a small state, a sparsely populated state like Oklahoma. Oklahoma's an odd place. I mean, I like parts of Oklahoma, I really do. Been to the University of Oklahoma for an OSU Oklahoma football game, and it was a lot of fun. People treated us good. I mean, a lot of Okies, really nice folks, but my God, I just scratch my head when I see this Inhofe. I mean, don't they have TV out in the hinterlands where people actually see this guy talk? He made such an ass of himself on that panel yesterday trying to disparage Al Gore, and it just backfired on him. I'm sure the whole American public, right or left, is looking at him right now going, whoa, boy, don't say anything else. Just don't say anything else, please. And all the crap that's coming out over this now, they're spinning, and they want us to think that what happened in this whole deal with these U.S. attorneys happens in every administration. Why, there's no story there. Every administration does it. They get rid of all of them, and then whenever they feel like it, they serve at the pleasure of the president. We get rid of them and get some more. Well, that's not quite how it goes. That's how it can go, but that's not how it does go. The Bush administration has no more respect for the rule of law than they do the truth. Really, when it comes down to it, graft and corruption are their rules. Power at all costs. Let's take the recent sheep talking points. Letting attorneys go in midstream is not uncommon. And this is also known as the Clinton did it, so it must be okay defense. According to the Congressional Research Service, and I've got all 32 pages of it sitting right here, the Congressional Research Service report released earlier this week examines the tenure of all U.S. attorneys who were confirmed by the United States Senate between the years 1981 and 2006, 25 years worth, to determine how many had served and, of those, how many had been forced to resign for reasons other than a change in administration. The answer is, of the 468 confirmations made by the Senate over the 25-year period in question, only 10 left office involuntarily for reasons other than a change in administration prior to the firings that took place in December during this Bush administration. In virtually all of those 10 previous cases, serious issues of personal or professional conduct appeared to be the driving issue. Prior to December, for example, only 2 U.S. attorneys were outright fired in the last 25 years for improper and in one case, criminal behavior. The Congressional Research Service report identifies six other U.S. attorneys who resigned during the 25-year period who were implicated in news reports of questionable conduct. For two others, the CRS was unable to determine the cause. In other words, the Bush administration pushed out almost as many U.S. attorneys in December as had been let go over the last 25 years. Tell me there's not something seriously criminal going on with this right here, or highly unethical. How many different explanations? You know, prosecuting attorney, I heard a good prosecuting attorney talk today. When you're grilling a subject, and let's say the Bush administration is a subject in this, when the Justice Department and the White House, and you get one story, and then you get another story, and they switch back to the other story, and then another story, and then refuse to talk, there's something wrong. There's something rotten in Denmark, is what my mother would used to say. I don't know why Denmark. I don't know why it's going to say in Scotland or Belgium. I don't know. Another one of those things you wonder where it came from. But why is it? Why does this happen? That they change their story several times. They refuse to talk. And then we find that there's an 18-day gap. God, I was going back to Rosemary Wood during the Nixon administration. They tracked down another set of emails during the 18-day gap between Kyle Sampson and Brett Ward. There's this big gap in all these emails. This thing was going great guns. Bang, zoom. They were figuring out all sorts of ways and who they were going to fire and how they were going to fire and who's going to let them know and who were they going to replace them with. And all of a sudden, whew, that's it. No more emails for 18 days. Just one, I think it was. Just completely shut it off. Now, you don't think the White House is hiding a bunch of emails that took place during those 18 days, do you? Nah, they wouldn't do that, would they? Oh, certainly not. Not this White House. No. They wouldn't do it. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call. Where was I here? I had a note here about something else I wanted to mention, and I've naturally lost it. I'm so good at that. I think I'm highly prepared every day, and then all of a sudden I lose my little list of things that I was going to talk about. 866-546-5254. Where are we at here? You know, they keep talking about this, the Republicans, and I think they think we'll act like Republicans. I think that's what they're thinking. After Republicans took control of Congress in 1994, and it would be impossible for them to not think this, I believe, that we'll end up acting like them. That's why they're so damn scared right now. But after they took control of Congress in 1994, and I heard Tom DeLay last night, I heard him tell Chris Matthews, well, all these Democrats know how to do is investigate and serve subpoenas. Why, they've done more of this already than we did in 6 years. Well, that's right, Tom. You didn't do any investigating in 6 years, and God knows you certainly should have. There should have been a half a dozen good investigations on you alone, Mr. DeLay. But, of course, when the Ethics Committee was being threatened by you, well, I guess it just wasn't going to happen. But it was laughable to have him say that the Democrats have already done more than they did in 6 years. In 1994, after they took control of Congress, the House Government Reform Committee issued more than 1,000 subpoenas to investigate alleged misconduct by the Clinton administration and the Democratic Party, or two for every day Congress was in session. My, that doesn't jive with the story the Republicans are putting out right now, does it? That these Democrats are subpoena happy, investigative happy? No, that doesn't jive at all. After they took control of Congress in 1994, the House Government Reform Committee issued more than 1,000 subpoenas. They must have had an assembly line going to investigate Clinton and the Democratic Party. And I guess the question is, are Republicans worried that congressional investigations will be a little bit burdensome for them? The Clinton administration produced 2 million pages of documents. That's an average of 4,000 pages of documents for every day that Congress was in session. So, you know, I guess the question again is, are the Republicans worried that the congressional investigations will be intrusive? Three Clinton chiefs of staff, Mac McClarty, Erskine Bowles, and John Podesta, all testified before Congress, as did 4 White House counsels, the chief of staff to the vice president, the chief of staff to the first lady, and an assortment of White House officials with deputy or deputy assistant in their titles. A total of 134 Clinton administration officials testified in public hearings on alleged Clinton administration misconduct, and 141 Clinton administration officials spent 568 hours in depositions before congressional staff. They testified to private discussions with the president and the documents that the Clinton administration provided, including notes of those discussions, internal emails and memos, and preliminary drafts of documents. The Republicans in Congress routinely demanded documents detailing internal administration deliberations for evidence that political considerations had improperly influenced Clinton administration policies. And the Clinton administration routinely provided the documents that the Congress demanded, the Republican Congress. Are the Republicans worried that congressional investigations will pursue trivial matters without any sense of proportion like they did? The Clinton administration provided records to identify who had attended White House movies, private White House dinners, and ate lunch at the White House mess, and who had sat in the president's box at the Kennedy Center. Congress took 140 hours of testimony in public hearings and depositions on whether the Clinton White House had misused the holiday Christmas card list for political purposes. And they're talking about Democrats running too many investigations and issuing a few subpoenas? Are the Republicans worried that Democrats will launch sweeping investigations based on unsubstantiated allegations? In 1997, Congressman Gerald Solomon, the chairman of the House Rules Committee, notified the FBI with great fanfare, you'll remember, that there was evidence that a Chinese-American fundraiser for the Democratic National Committee was guilty of espionage and had sold secrets to the Chinese. 2 years later, the Government Reform Committee launched an investigation into whether the absence of indictments was the result of political interference with the FBI's investigation. The Government Reform Committee Chairman Dan Burton subpoenaed the interview notes from the FBI investigation. And of course, as you all know, that proved to be a mistake. No one the FBI interviewed had a clue what Solomon was talking about. And their interview notes that the FBI produced included the notes of their interview with Solomon. Solomon had talked to a Senate staffer at a congressional reception who told Solomon that he'd heard about the espionage from an unnamed employee of the Department of Commerce. Solomon had never met the Senate staffer before and couldn't remember his name. When Bush took office, of course, almost all oversight by Congress of the executive branch stopped. Congressman Ray LaHood, said, our party controls the levers of government. We're not about to go out and look under a bunch of rocks to try to cause heartburn. It was disgusting what they did to Bill Clinton. They bragged about it. They crowed about it. They made political hay off of it almost every day. And now, with a couple of subpoenas maybe coming their way, oh, they're just having a fit. Just having a fit. I love it. I really do. Love to see them squirm. Yes, I'm that kind of a guy. I really am. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Wind is the whisper of our mother, the earth. The wind is the hand of our father, the sky. The wind watches over our struggles and pleasures. The wind is a goddess who first learned to fly. Rainbow, the wind is the singer who sang the first song. The wind is a twister of anger and mourning. The wind brings a fragrance of freshly mown hay. The wind is a racer and a wild stallion. Sweet taste of love on a slow summer's day. The wind knows the songs of the cities and canyons, thunder of mountains, roar of the sea. The wind giver of morning, the wind is the symbol of all that is free. So welcome the wind and the wisdom she offers. Follow her summons and she calls again. Your heart and your spirit, let the breezes surround you. Lift up your voice then and sing with the wind. La 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 la.
Back with you here in the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and for those of you that are listening that are not on the chat room, we just heard from Mark Levine. Mark is over in Israel right now visiting, doing a little touring and so forth. Good to hear from him. And he'll be back in a week or so, I guess. Going to meet up with Mark again here before long. So take care, Mark, and Godspeed. And looking forward to getting back to the States here pretty soon. Hope you're safe and secure there in Israel while you're looking around. Mark, a good guy. Had a chance to meet Mark in person a while back and enjoyed his company immensely. He knows his way around Washington real well, and it's a good guy to know when you're there. 866-546-5254. You still got a few minutes to call before the top of the hour. Want to welcome all of our friends over on the iTunes. We hear from a great number of them during the program via email. And it's awfully good to have all of you folks along. Interesting different group of people that come along from iTunes. Most of the people that normally listen to the program are pretty hardcore political activists or have politics as a hobby or one of their great interests in their life. And the people on iTunes, not necessarily so. A lot of music lovers there that come on over and they see the talk radio format on there and come by, haven't been here and stopped by, and it's great to hear from all those folks that have never listened to the Head On Radio Network before. So welcome to all the folks from iTunes. It's good to have you along. I see that we got a pretty good number of you there today, and I hope you'll give us a call at 866-546-5254. We're going to have Bruce from talkingradio.blogspot.com coming up in the second hour. He's going to give us his weekly wrap-up of what's going on in the world of talk radio, and I'm sure he'll have some... I didn't really pay attention to everything that's going on in talk radio this week, so he'll have some news for us along those lines, I'm sure. Interesting little factoid here. I love things like this. What does New York have more of than Rhode Island, Montana, South Dakota, Delaware, North Dakota, Alaska, Vermont, and Wyoming all put together? What does New York City have more of than Rhode Island, Montana, South Dakota, Delaware, North Dakota, Alaska, Vermont, and Wyoming all put together? People. And let's see, how many states is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 16 senators. And the people of New York City are represented actually by 2. And someone was pointing that out. I know that's a big flaw in the system, and I don't know what will ever be done about it. But here you have the populace of a... 8 states all concentrated in New York City, and they've got 2 senators representing them in Congress, and those other people have 16. So they have a great disparity over the people of New York City. They're represented by 8 times as many senators. And that doesn't seem quite right, now does it? And it would explain a lot of things. New York City gets to share 2 senators with the rest of New York State, which, by the way, is also larger than all those other states put together. In fact, there are 18 states with a combined population less than New York in its entirety, New York State. The discrimination is, of course, not unique to New York. The larger states of California and Texas have it even worse. And the capital colony of Washington, D.C., lacks even partial representation in the Senate. That's something that needs to be corrected. You know, they talk about the woes of Washington, D.C. Well, certainly some of it's got to do with the fact that they don't have any official representation in the United States Congress. They're looked at as the, second cousin or something. Nobody takes care of them the way they should be taken care of, the people there. And everybody just kind of puts that on the back burner all the time. I don't know why, but they do. So, just a little factoid I thought you might enjoy, that the people of New York have 2 senators, and the people of those other 8 states that don't even have as much population as New York have 16. Something kind of out of whack with all that, I think. Coming up on news time here at the top of the hour, got about a minute to go before we check in with the news folks. We'll have a lot more information coming up for you in the second hour of the program today. Get myself organized here a little bit. Eric sent me in some great quotes by Dwight D. Eisenhower. Said, when people speak to you about a preventative war, you tell them to go and fight it. After my experience, I've come to hate war. And he said, I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, only as one who has seen it, its brutality, its stupidity. War settles nothing. Well, Ike's proven to be a pretty doggone wise man after all these years. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
diagnosed with and treated for breast cancer in 2004. Edwards says he will continue his 2008 bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, saying the campaign goes on. Mrs. Edwards has cancer in her rib. The doctors are saying the cancer is treatable but not curable. She says she is incredibly optimistic about the future. A Senate panel today authorized subpoenas for top White House political aides, including political advisor Karl Rove, in connection with the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The House authorized its own subpoenas yesterday. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer noted that authorization is not the same as issuance. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is once again telling reporters that he will not resign over the firings. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were fired for poor performance. Opponents say they were removed for political reasons. President Bush is challenging Congress to pass the Iraq War Emergency Spending Bill without adding conditions about the pullout of U.S. troops. The House debate on the $124 billion spending bill starts today, with a vote expected tomorrow. An Appropriations Committee vote is scheduled for today on the $122 billion Senate bill. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is urging Congress to reopen the federal fund for victims of 9/11. The mayor says many people who worked to clean up the World Trade site have fallen ill because of exposure to several deadly chemicals and toxins within the rubble. In Baghdad today, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference when a rocket landed near the Prime Minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and appeared shaken but was unharmed. No injuries were reported as a result of the attack. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken when the attack occurred in Baghdad. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. Three men have been arrested in connection with the July 7, 2005 terrorist attacks that killed 52 people in London. According to Scotland Yard, two of the three men were arrested at the airport as they were about to board a plane to Pakistan. Nuclear disarmament talks with North Korea have fallen apart. The chief North Korean envoy has left the negotiations and returned home. The North Korean government has refused to sit down at the bargaining table. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Today is World Water Day, and the theme of this year's UN event is water scarcity, a problem caused by overpopulation and pollution. Scientists at the UN say that by the year 2025, two-thirds of the planet's population will be living with, quote, water stress, end quote. North Africa, the Middle East, and West Asia will likely be the worst afflicted regions. Two new imaging techniques should help doctors diagnose lung disease earlier. University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine researchers say one of the techniques uses an MRI to watch helium gas flow through the lungs as a person breathes. Doctors should be able to use the results of the research as early as this summer. A federal judge today struck down a U.S. law, the Child Online Protection Act, passed in 1998, which makes it a crime for website operators to allow children to access harmful material. The law was challenged by the ACLU. The decision is seen as a victory for the First Amendment. NBC, Universal, and News Corp are teaming up to distribute television shows, movies, and video clips online. They are working with several large internet companies in the venture as a way to counter the popular video sharing website, YouTube. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.69 a barrel. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 13, the NASDAQ down 4, and the S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And glad to be here. We truly are. And we've got a lot to talk about this hour. We hope you'll join us. 866-546-5254. And you can call us toll-free right there. If you happen to be in Washington, D.C., you can call us toll-free at 202-370-6153. And from all of our folks out at the Phoenix Bureau, you can call us at 623-444-5252. And we hope you'll join the discussion this afternoon. Want to send our best of wishes along to Elizabeth Edwards, a super lady. We've had the opportunity to meet Elizabeth, and she's... She's the real deal. She's a very, very lovable, very intelligent, very well-spoken woman, and we wish her the very best through all the trials and tribulations that she's going through right now, and will continue to do so for some time to come. Probably the rest of her life is the way they're talking now, that she's not able to be cured, but just hopefully keep it contained. And a wonderful woman. And she's got a fine husband and a fine family, and we hope that things turn out well for them. They're great people, the Edwards are. I do want to remind you once again that Billy Shears, musical director here at the Guy James Show, is doing his Thursday night special, and you can check that out at Shears Music, shearsmusic.livejournal.com, shearsmusic.livejournal.com, or you can also check it out at unreportednews.net over there on the left side where it says Billy Shears down on the side. Be sure and do that. And Billy wanted me to let you know, and I want to let you know, we're celebrating the first anniversary of our new studio here, and we're going to offer an anniversary special for 2 days only, in addition to the show CD that... he's going to offer a custom CD to anybody that contributes $10 or more per month, and they can choose any song up to 14. And anyway, we'll get your address if you sign up for the contribution per month, and we'll make sure you get that. So let us know your list of songs as well. 866-546-5254. Been looking at this whole ugly situation that's going on now with all the scandals, and again, we're on overload just like everybody else. It's so hard to keep up with all of them, as we mentioned yesterday. And although our country is dangerously and in my opinion irreconcilably split between red and blue states and white and black and Christian and Muslim and North and South, we're split a couple of different ways. We're all sharing one thing together, and that's the fact that we have the worst president in American history sitting in the White House right now. We're sharing that. But is it all Junior Bush's fault? I mean, after all, I mean, we know he's an ignorant fool and an all-around bad human being who's stubborn, has that Texas-style big tough guy talk, and prefers, you know, he prefers to settle every problem that we have with violence. Just the kind of guy he is, all mouth. But as bad as he is, as lame a leader as we've ever known in this country, I don't think the whole mess we're in right now is entirely his fault. It's the Republicans that have done us the most damage. The Republicans. That's right, the good old GOP. They're the ones who have been hell-bent upon destroying the fabric of America, and I might add, they've done a damn good job at doing it. We've watched it take place over the last quarter century or so. Our military, despite the fact that they're always talking about how they're for national defense, and those Democrats aren't. Democrats are soft on national defense, and we're the good ones. I think we're seeing right before our eyes our militaries being gradually destroyed in a war we should never have been involved in at all. The soldiers coming home from there being treated like cattle after all the talk about support to troops and those millions of little ribbons traveling around on cars all over America. People blissfully unaware of the fact that when the soldiers come home with their arms or legs blown off or their eyes gone or whatever happens to be a grievous injury, come home and being treated like a dog, staying in a place with black mold, the floor rotting through, not enough services, not enough personnel to adequately take care of them. But support the troops, everybody. You know, those Democrats don't support the troop. It's just good Republicans that support the troop. Buy me some more of those ribbons. I saw a car the other day driving around with about a dozen of them on the back, and I had a Bush Cheney 04 sticker on it. I thought, you son of a bitch. How dare you do that? Hell, I know farmers that take better care of their cattle than this Republican administration is doing with our troops. And all the while, their grand guru, Newt Gingrich, he's hitting the lecture circuit, urging total war in the Middle East, advocating taking away any and all regulations regarding politicians grabbing money. He's all for getting rid of all the regulations. He's preaching that we need to do away with Social Security as well. And he's saying all of this to record crowds of adoring Republicans who see him as some sort of a savior for their party. The more kids that are thrown into poverty who can't any longer afford higher education, it's the better for them. Better for the Republicans. The more wages and benefits, the more they're reduced, the better for them. The bottom line looks better. The more the population living on the edge uses their credit cards and build up massive debt, it's the better for them. They're the ones collecting the interest on those credit cards. The more we pay for health care, if we can pay for it at all, the better for them. They push for all of this while one of our great cities lies rotting on the Gulf Coast with no help in sight, no significant help in sight. And the blood of Americans flowing in the streets of Baghdad or Fallujah means nothing to them. It's not their kids doing the dying. This all started, this whole damn mess started, when the GOP useful idiot Ronald Reagan started telling everyone that government wasn't the solution, but the problem. Then they executed their grand plan of getting rid of that pesky and troublesome fairness doctrine. That allowed them to take control of AM radio, and they used it as the bully pulpit through the mouths of Limbaugh and the rest of the right-wing talkers to push the agenda of old Nudie Boy as he pulled off his so-called revolution. Do you remember when Limbaugh was touting that back when he was the main one pushing Nudie? Mr. Speaker. And just like they promised, they start cutting taxes for their fat cat friends, and the disparity between the rich and the poor has never been greater, and that's the way they designed it. That's the way they like it. It's all worked so very well for them. The rich live a lifestyle of luxury and the privilege, while the rest of the nation can't even afford to rent. And they're left without some of the government safety nets that used to be available for those who needed some help now and then. I have to tell you, and I don't know how many people live in an area where I live, but not a lot, I don't think, because close by where I live is one of the richest, wealthiest, most ostentatious places in the United States. And if you haven't been there, I can tell you, in Naples, Florida, there's unbelievable wealth. And I have to tell you that it really burns me when I drive by the Naples, Florida airport on Friday evening and see the armada of private jets coming in one after another after another. People getting in their Bentleys, which happen to be their second cars that they leave at the airport all week, and driving to their $20 million homes over on Gulf Drive and in Port Royal, which is the unbelievably wealthy section of Naples, while others live in squalor only a few blocks away. And that's the way they like it. I can't and I won't deny that these people are smart. They were able to do all this by understanding that the American, you know, they understand the American people a whole lot better than the Democrats do. They understood that the American people don't read very much, and they don't really get involved in most political matters, and so they became masters of using the soundbite and propagandizing the people into listening to whatever they wanted to push, like abortion and homosexuality and religion and guns and immigration and absolutely blatant racism. And all the while, they're waving the flag like they were the patriots and the rest of us were some kind of foreign agents wanting to bring down the country. We became liberals. What a dirty word. And we hate God, and we're commies. We're commies who like the French. They've done a brilliant job on us. I don't think there's any question about that. So I ask you, is this the fault of Junior Bush? Or is it the fault of the mob who willingly suck up everything these people shovel out to them? I think you know the answer to that. And more people are suffering right now because of all this. I think you may have seen that home foreclosures are reaching a record high, that there may be as many as 3 million this year. 3 million home foreclosures. Wasn't it just a short time ago that Mr. Bush was talking about presiding over the all-time record of home ownership here in the United States? Well, a lot of those homes are being taken away now because people can't afford them anymore. Why? Because they lost their jobs. Because the jobs are moving overseas. And even those who do have jobs don't make a decent wage. I'm telling you, folks, the economy certainly is not what they'd like you to believe on TV. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, how are you? This is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
Hey, I just wanted to make sure we included something on your statement earlier. Not only has one of the great cities in the United States been destroyed, but there's also little towns on the Mississippi Gulf Coast that was destroyed, and these rats aren't doing a thing but making it worse. With like towns like Waverly, Bay St. Louis, Jackson County has so many cities that's almost on runs. So, you know, let's not leave them out.
Well, I think we use New Orleans as a symbol for the whole area there.
That's the problem, Guy. Too many people, when you hear say Katrina, they automatically think New Orleans, and they forget about the rest of it. And I think that's something that we need.
Well, it doesn't seem like anybody's even remembered New Orleans. I was reading.
No, that's sad. It's true, though.
I was reading today something like, 3,000 homes sitting there rotting that they don't even have the money to tear them down.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And like Jim Yancey's doing this 100 homes in 100 days starting on Monday, and would you believe the governor's fighting him tooth and nail and trying to destroy every funding that he gets just because it's an embarrassment to the governor? That's what you got with Republicans, you know.
Yeah, Mr. Haley Barbour.
Yeah, I just want to call and clarify that.
All right.
I don't want nothing forgotten.
Yeah, all right, Sergeant. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and New Orleans is a symbol for that whole area, the whole Gulf Coast down there that was wiped out, and it's most assuredly is not just New Orleans, but that whole area around there. For many miles around, untold death and destruction, and not a whole lot being done about it, sorry to say. One of the worst messes this United States has ever faced. And here we are, forgotten about it. I don't know, did Bush even mention it in his State of the Union speech this year? I'm thinking that he did not. You know damn well it's not on his mind, Southern Gulf Coast. Not on his mind at all. It's over and done with, and whatever money that they put to it, it's gone. Half of it was stolen. Fat cats from the Bush administration, friends of Brownie and Carnival Cruise Lines, and everybody jumped in and took their share. Out-of-town construction companies, out-of-town trucking companies, lots of out-of-towners went in and feasted on the federal money that was there for a while. But it's like many charities, 75% of it went to the administration of whatever jobs they were doing, and only 25% of it went to the people, if that. But it's a horrible problem, and unfortunately, it's one of several problems in this country that government of the Bush administration and these conservatives, the neocons, they don't give a rat's behind about it. I've heard them say, and you've heard them say, well, let's let them, I heard the governor of Montana talking about the flood they had up there several years back and saying, well, let those people pull themselves up by their bootstraps like the people in Montana did after their flood. Damn, he was comparing that flood in Montana to what happened on the Gulf Coast? Would any rational person make a statement like that? Let them get themselves going like we did in Montana. Yeah. Axis of feeble indeed. There are so many things in this country that are forgotten right now. We've got the political war going on, and as it should be, they need to be called into account for many, many things that they've done wrong. But what's getting done? Is there anything getting done moving toward any kind of a national health care system in this country? Do you hear it mentioned even anymore? I know the Edwards campaign has mentioned it. I know Dennis Kucinich mentions it. But I don't hear a big hue and cry for it. I don't hear a big hue and cry about the environmental issues that Al Gore is talking about. I mean, a lot of people pay lip service to it, but is there any serious effort being done on the part of our government to make sure that what Al predicts, that we can in some way nullify some of the consequences of it? There's nothing being done. Nothing. And, you know, they excoriate him. They criticize him coming for the Congress and with his movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Oh, he doesn't know. He's just a radical extremist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Hey, he's got plenty of science behind what he's put out in front of the public. Plenty of science. Plenty of science. But the right-wingers don't believe in actual science. They'll politicize the issue, and they'll go find themselves somebody from the Competitive Enterprise Institute or one of the AEI, American Enterprise Institute. They'll go find some scientists from there, organizations funded by the oil companies, by the way. They'll find scientists there to refute what Al Gore has to say in their hopes of negating anything he has to say so that they won't have to take any money out of their pockets, out of the corporate pockets of the world. and help pay for any environmental issues that we may be facing in the future? Oh, no, we wouldn't want to do that, now would we? But there lays one of the most important issues of our time. There lays Katrina, the aftermath. Not a damn thing being done. Oh, yes, there's some private initiatives being done. Some houses being built here and there, and that's wonderful that the private initiatives do that. But there ought to be government money pouring in there. Instead, it was all blown early on. Graft and corruption. It's an ugly situation. I'm not in that good of a mood today, I guess. 866-546-5254. Give us a call. We'll be back.
Don't let the sun catch you crying. The night's the time for all your tears. Your heart may be broken tonight, but tomorrow in the morning light, don't let the sun catch you crying. The nighttime shadows disappear, and with them go all your tears. All the morning will bring joy for every girl and boy. So don't let the sun catch you crying. We know the crying's not a bad thing, but stop your crying. May be hard to discover that you've been left for another, but don't forget that love's a game, and it can always come again. Oh, don't let the sun catch you crying. Don't let the sun catch you crying. Oh no. Oh, oh, oh.
I miss it a lot. Gonna take her mind, lay it on the line. Yes, Yeah, she's going to get shook by a hook or by crook. Yeah, she's going to get shook
by a hook or by crook.
It's just a matter of time. Cowboy with his saddle.
How many of you heard Tony Snow the last couple of days? Isn't he a treat right now? I just can't stand Tony Snow. I guess I've said that before, but I just can't. Here's a guy that'll look at you, smile, and lie to your face. Paid to do it. You know, it doesn't help that he came from Fox. We knew he was a damn liar already. And he comes into the White House, and I understand that it's the press secretary's job to try and make the president look good, but does he have to stand and lie to the American public? How can you do that? How can you be such a whore? Did you hear what he said yesterday about, you know, well, this, you know, we've got the executive privilege after all, and this need to protect the information that the President of the United States gets. Listen to what he said back March 29th, 1998, when Clinton had tried to use executive privilege. He said, most of us want no part of a president who is cynical enough to use the majesty of his office to evade the one thing he has sworn to uphold, the rule of law. My, how times change when you are in the employee of the White House, does it not? God, Tony Snow, how could you do that? How could you do that? In other news, I see the U.S. is looking to sell arms in the Gulf to try to contain Iran. They need congressional okay on this, but the State Department and the Pentagon are quietly seeking congressional approval for significant new military sales to U.S. allies in the Persian Gulf region. Now, there's a hell of a good idea. Let's just give those people some more fireworks to play with. Yes, indeed. The move is part of a broader American strategy to contain Iranian influence by strengthening Iran's neighbors and signaling that the United States is still a strong military player in the Middle East despite all of the difficulties in Iraq. Now, we know Iran has an effective air force. We also know they have a rather small navy. We know that they've got, what, a million-man standing army. We know that they've got modern weapons. And so we're going to go around to their neighbors and sell them arms? Are we going to equip any of them to the point where they could actually stand up against the Iranians if it came to that? I don't think so. But here we've got this boiling cauldron going on, no thanks to the Bush administration. And they just want to turn up the heat. Yes, let's sell some arms to all of the neighbors over there. Let's just make sure everybody's got the all the weapons they'd ever need. But the arms sales, which would come on top of a recent upgrade of U.S. Patriot anti-missile interceptors in Qatar and Kuwait, and the deployment of two aircraft carriers to the Gulf, could spark concerns that further military buildup in the volatile region would bring Washington closer to a confrontation with Iran. Well, no fooling. This is out of the Boston Globe, by the way. What an astute observation that is, that selling arms to the rest of them there might just throw a little fuel on the fire. Who would have thunk it? Senior U.S. officials have been tight-lipped in public about what systems they hope to sell, citing the need to get congressional support for the measure first and skittishness among Arab allies that don't want the publicity. Ship all those weapons in through the back door. We'll give you the cash. Make sure, bring them in the middle of the night. Current and former U.S. officials and analysts familiar with any discussions say that items under consideration include sophisticated air and missile defense systems, advanced early warning radar aircraft that could detect low-flying missiles, and light coastal combat ships that could sweep the Gulf for mines and help gather underwater intelligence. The arms sales are a Cold War-style geopolitical maneuver designed to isolate Iran by arming its neighbors against a perceived common threat. You know what worries me is that Condi Rice is in on this. She says we should look at this in the broader context of what, you know, the looming confrontation between extremists and moderates. Man. Said the move could be an economic boon for the New England area, which manufactures some of the weapons systems that are believed to be under consideration for sale. And, see, they're going to sell them to Qatar, or Qatar, however you like to pronounce it, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Oman, and, a drum roll please, our good friends and allies and ever trustworthy Saudi Arabians. Yes, sir. Let's give them plenty of, let's give them all the weapons they need. Said not every country opted to buy a new weapon system. Interesting story. Let's just go out and make damn sure that, I first read that today and I thought, you know, they're kidding. Surely they're not going to do this. And then, and they're mentioned on the chat room, yeah, the Bushies know well about selling weapons to Arabs. Yeah, ask Daddy Bush. Ask the Reagans about selling arms to a lot of people in that area. Seems to me that a guy named, Hussein. Yeah, that's the one. Saddam Hussein. Seems like he bought quite a few weapons from the United States of America and caused just a little bit of problem there in the region with it. And that worked out so damn well that we decided we'd just do it again. We find every tin horn dictator in the world and arm them. Sooner or later, I guess we end up slapping them down ourselves or being in cahoots with somebody else that does. God, some of the decisions made in that White House. Not just this White House. And we got a story in that, thank God, comes out of Ohio, from Cleveland. Ohio's new elections chief pressured Cuyahoga County Election Board members on Tuesday to resign or face removal hearings to clear the way for new leadership at the embattled agency plagued by voter problems. I'm telling you one thing. Governor Strickland up in Ohio, he's not wasting any time. He's kicking ass and taking names right now. They walked in there with a job to do. The new Ohio Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, they're getting the job done. They're going to kick these bums out that ran these nasty elections that everybody knows about. I'm just thrilled to see it, finally. Ted Strickland, a fine, fine man. I think he's going to be a great governor for the state of Ohio. I know damn well he's a much-needed governor for the state of Ohio after Taft was in there, probably one of the worst governors the great Buckeye State has ever had. And this story. Kitty Kelly, I'm sure you've read her Hollywood of Hollywood fame. She wrote a new book, The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty. And she asked the question, why aren't the Bush daughters in Iraq? I think that's a fine question. She said, when I was a little girl in a convent school, the nuns impressed me on the power of setting a good example. These beloved teachers are no longer around to instruct the president and his family, so I recommended that the Bushies learn from Mark Twain, who said, always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. She said, my suggestion comes after the White House announcement earlier this month that Jenna Bush, one of the president's twin daughters, is writing a book on her all-expenses-paid trip to Panama, where she worked for a few weeks as an intern for UNICEF. Jenna Bush is quoted as saying she'll donate her earnings from her book to UNICEF, a commendable gesture, considering her father's net worth of $20 million. We'll see if it sells as well as the Cheney Girls book did. But while the 25-year-old makes the rounds of TV talk shows this fall in the White House limousines, dozens of her contemporaries will be arriving home from Iraq in wooden boxes. In Britain, Prince Harry's insisting on going off to Iraq, even as his country is reducing its troop commitment. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as most of you all know, showed how the power of good example could also be powerfully good in good politics. When he led the country to sacrifice in World War II, his children enlisted and his wife traveled to military bases to counsel and comfort the families of soldiers. Newsreels showed the president's four sons fighting with the Marines in the Pacific, flying with the Army Air Force in North Africa, and landing with the Navy at Normandy. Soon other public figures followed suit. Movie stars James Stewart and Clark Gable enlisted, and sports heroes Joe DiMaggio, Hank Greenberg, Ted Williams. They went off to war. The contrast between FDR's good example during wartime and that of George W. Bush is stark and sad. The Bush family rallies to the political campaigns of its scions and spends months on the road raising money and shaking hands to put their men into public office. In fact, the public image of their cohesive family, the pearl-choked matriarch surrounded by progeny and Springer Spaniels, helped since more than one presidency for the Bushes. Yet now, when its legacy is most in peril, the family seems to be squandering its goodwill on a mess, a terrible mess. Now, Bushy tells us this is a noble war, but his kids didn't go. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy?
Yes.
Bruce.
Oh, hi, Bruce. How are you doing today?
All right. How are you?
I was running off the head there and forgot all about you. I'm glad you, Bruce, from Talking Radio is with us.
Oh. Are we on the air?
Yes, we are.
Oh. How exciting.
How's that for a cold entrance?
Yeah, well, sorry I didn't show up at my usual time, but I'm glad you could accommodate me today.
Well, certainly. And, I wasn't looking at the clock. I was all engrossed in something I had to say, and I said, hey, let's go to the phones, and there you were. So I'm glad you reminded us. Bruce is with us today to let us know about the world of talk radio.
Yeah.
And, Bruce, tell us, of course, give us your
Well, there are two stories that I kind of wanted to talk about. It's been a relatively quiet week, although I do have some announcements that I'm not in a position to talk about now that I hope to be covering by this weekend that will appear on the blog on Monday. And the blog is www.talkingradio.blogspot.com. But the two stories that I have right now One, which is posted, it was what I guess we'd have to call the Tempest in a Teapot, which was the dispute between Mark Maron and Sam Sater over Sam's continued role at Air America Radio, which took place at the beginning of the week, but it sort of died down now. But
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, apparently Mark made a statement that he was contacted by someone at Air America to be a morning talk host on the network. And at first it was reported that he turned it down because he didn't want to do anything to impair his friendship with Sam Sater. So he was suggesting that they were trying to get rid of Sam and hire him, and he turned it down. That was what he claimed.
Now let me ask you a quick question. Would this not be the first time in history that ever happened, that a guy turned down a job?
No. But it was, the question is, was it appropriate for him to even bring that up? That I think is, and a couple of the bloggers picked it up. I wasn't the first one, but I did put something on there about it. And then by the next day, apparently Mark Maron was a little embarrassed by his revelation, which was made, by the way, in a comedy club in Tucson, Arizona. And he said, well, it wasn't exactly that way. They said they were going to move Sam Sater to the evenings. They weren't going to cancel his show. They were just going to move him to the evenings. So that was his comeback there. Yeah. So that was the first thing, and I did get an email from Sam, which is reported in the blog, where Sam was not too pleased that that Mark went public with his alleged offer from Air America. And of course, Air America, they denied the whole thing. So.
Oh, who knows? So, you know, I've seen to give people an idea, and you know this, of what the business is really like. I've seen replacements standing out in the hall that have been good friends with the guy on air who's getting fired this moment, and they shovel him in the still warm seat, and they were good friends. I mean, I've seen that happen several times.
Well, I guess the conventional wisdom on what's going to be happening they just hired a which I think I talked about last week, David Bernstein, who's been around. He's been in the radio business for 30 years. He's been program director for WOR in New York and about a half a dozen other stations. So he's got a pretty good resume. And it would surprise me that if they're not going to make some programming changes there. But at the same time, it would surprise me if they did anything preemptively at this point, because this guy has just been hired about a week ago.
Right. Yeah. And it was just about a week ago.
So I think they're going to take a little time to decide what they're going to do next. But anyhow, as I said, that story really more like a tempest in a teapot. What I will be posting probably within an hour or half hour of our finish of our conversation today, so anybody who would like to see it can look at it. This one I've done a little more research on, and it involves the launch of the Dennis Miller Show on Monday. I'm sure you got lots of Dennis Miller fans out there who are dying to hear what this guy has to say.
Dennis Miller. Who's this indicating Dennis Miller?
Westwood One.
Okay.
They claim they've got 80 stations that are going to pick him up starting on Monday with his brand new, just what we need, another conservative talk show. I mean, it's not crowded enough out there. But I'm covering it from two perspectives. One, not really being too critical about Mr. Miller, who Dennis was. What was he? He was fired from CNBC when he did a talk show, and then he was fired from Monday Night Football when he did color commentary. So his track record since he left television has not been too good. So it's doubtful whether he's going to make a good radio talk show host. But that being said, I did a little research on his clearances and found out of the 12 stations where, and I won't list them all because it's too tedious to do on the radio, but of the 12 stations that he is going to be carried on, their average rating is under a point.
Oh.
Now, I know this might be a little obscure for some of your fans.
That means not a very big audience, folks.
No, not a very big audience. In fact,
really small.
To commend Liberal Talk, I matched up the markets where there's a Liberal Talk station and there's also a Dennis Miller affiliate, and found out that the Liberal Talk stations have a 25% higher rating.
Yeah.
So even with all the problems we're facing in Liberal Talk, he's got a tough assignment going ahead.
I wonder how long of a contract he signed.
Well, he's got a I'm sure it's a pretty sweetheart deal. He gets to record his show from his home in Santa Barbara, which is I guess that's what it's all about, is to be able to, like you do it, do it out of your living room.
Well, I don't exactly do that.
Or whatever. But...
Yeah,
I mean, Rush Limbaugh does it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
He does it out of his home in West Palm Beach. So.
Neil Bortz has a studio in his home here in Naples.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be the way things are happening in the business now.
Well, why not? Who wants to get in the car and travel very far and put up with that every day when you can? That's the coming thing.
Yeah. So those are the two stories we're talking about. And
I'm going to stick my neck out and say Miller won't last long. There you have it.
Yeah. We'll see. One other comment on the Miller story.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a little bit, as I say, a little bit esoteric for the average talk radio listener who doesn't follow ratings in the business. I also wanted to cover it to say what happens when you launch a new right-wing talk show in a very crowded field. And it was interesting. The biggest distributor of his programming is going to be Salem, which is the Christian network.
Okay.
Yeah. And they are basically moving some things around, but they really gave a shot to Michael Savage. And Michael Savage has been dropped on three or four of their stations.
Salem?
As a result of clearing Dennis Miller. So it'll be interesting to see if Savage goes ballistic on that decision.
Well, you know he will.
Discovered. Oh yeah, he feels that he's slighted anyhow. He doesn't get enough appreciation. He's not given the respect that Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and now Dennis Miller are being given by the syndicators.
Or Guy James.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miller is one of those guys, he just won't go away. He's like that. What was that actor on Taxi that keeps coming back all the time? You remember?
I know
he's.
He's
just
about.
Been recycled 100 times. He just keeps coming back, and Miller does too. Well, we shall see. He's got 9 lives in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
Well,
those are the deals that are happening right now, and I just thought your listeners might enjoy following that. If they do, they can check out my blog. That's www.talkingradio.blogspot.com.
All right. Hey, Bruce, thanks so much. We'll look forward to hearing from you.
You have a couple of minutes to wrap up your show here.
Oh, yeah. It's getting to be about that time, about 5 minutes and 18 seconds yet. So
yeah.
We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay, guy.
Take it easy, Bruce.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, the latest thing in talk radio. What's going on? Dennis Miller coming back again? Oh, geez. Please don't torture me that way. Well, I don't have to listen to it, but, yeah, somebody asked you, Dennis Miller on Christian stations? Mike Savage? I didn't know Mike Savage was on any Salem stations. I really didn't. What kind of hypocrisy would that be to have Mike Savage on any of the Salem I don't understand that at all. But, well, it's interesting to hear these little tidbits from Bruce. That Sam Seder thing, that was in Mark Maron. A little dust up there. Believe me. And I know this. I've done radio for a long, long time. And it's every man for himself. That's just pretty much the way it is. You don't very often find organizations like we got here at the Head On Radio Network, where we're kind of like a team. When we're not in competition with one another or anything like that, it's just one big team. And I kind of like that. And I kind of like it. I do like that. Because I can tell you, in the radio business all the way around the country, just about every single talk show host, except probably those at the very top, Limbaugh and Hannity and the top four or five there, in ratings, not in talent, they're looking over their shoulders. People are looking over their shoulders all the time in the radio business. The radio business has been ruined by and large terrestrial radio. Probably been ruined by syndication. A lot of good people have been put out of work all the way across the country. Like, you can get in your car at night now and drive clear across the country practically and listen to Delilah. I know a lot of you know who Delilah is, a lot of you don't, but think how many people that put out of business. Think how many people on the 600 stations Rush Limbaugh's on. Think how many jocks were put out of business, afternoon talk show guys or DJs or whatever. Think how many people lost their jobs just from one guy. So, interesting situation, radio, and it's changing drastically, and we think we're at the cutting edge here with the internet radio. We really do, the streaming, and the technology's coming along nicely. The quality of the sound is good or better. In most cases here on our network, it's better than most of the radio stations, most any of the radio stations, especially AM stations that you can get, so we're awfully proud of that. Well, it's been a fairly quiet day. I guess a lot of you just aren't thrilled about the subject of the U.S. attorney's scandal. You never know from one day to the next. You never, never know. If you have any... I'm not going to say that. I was going to throw it open. If anybody had any ideas that they especially would like for a show to be done, and I guess I know what everybody really does... but I thought since this is the story of the week, we'd talk about the story of the week. Maybe it's been overdone. Everybody's getting a little tired of it by now, I guess. I want to give you a quick Jack Murtha cut. I like Jack Murtha.
As the gentleman knows, the president can certify the troops are trained. The president can certify it's a national interest to have the troops stay there. Let me tell you talk to the families. You know how hard this was in the family. You know what a pain they bear. Not us, them, that they bear. The ones that are killed and out in the field. We're trying to work out a reasonable way to redirect the effort. We're trying to put more troops in. This has been so mismanaged over so long a period of time, it's hard to settle it in the Appropriations Committee. But we can't let it go on like this, where the troops continually go back overseas, being redeployed, and us sit here and say, well, we'll just extend them. The last week they extend them for 3 or 4 months. Then they're going to send them. You're suggesting we send them back ill-equipped and untrained? You're not suggesting that.
No, I'm not.
Good to hear from Jack Murtha. He really let his fellow congressman have it on that one, and rightly so. I respect Jack Murtha a whole lot. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you with us this afternoon. We hope you'll join us for our next show. Stay tuned for more great Head On Radio Network entertainment coming your way right after this, right after our show. And always remember, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.